Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind here on wonderful WBAI 99.5 FM in your, on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Concepts dealing with issues that we, over the years, 17 years, I've been here with WBAI, and in that time we've talked about just about everything, but we get letters from people. And the people ask us to address one or another issue. Today I want to talk about anorexia. Yes, anorexia nervosa. You know what that is? The interesting concept, you know, the people who say it's an eating disorder, people who won't eat, people who are very, very thin and have a certain relationship with food. I think we could learn a lot about it, and there's been some recent research on anorexia that's taught us a lot about maturational process in general, people growing up and how it affects them. So from this information, I think you could get a great deal. Included in this information is if you know somebody who is anorexic, or if you yourself are anorexic, or if you know of any with an impaired maturational system, like somebody who doesn't grow up, you might consider some of the research that we get from this. For this research today, I want to thank two people in the studio with me, Dr. Christine Ulrich. Christine, welcome back to WBAI.
It's nice to be here.
And Stephanie Dombra. Stephanie, thanks that you're here too today.
Thank you, Armand.
Stephanie Dombra is a psychotherapist, a sex therapist, a family therapist. Dr. Christine Ulrich is a molecular biologist, and she does life coaching. She helps people get from step A to step B directly. But two of these brilliant people helped me a great deal with what we're doing today. Let's talk about anorexia, okay? Let's talk about it. I mean, it means literally, what does it literally mean?
It means an appetite loss of nervous origins. That's the definition.
Appetite loss of nervous origin. Okay, now, it's almost a fear of being fat. These feelings include poor body image, phobic feelings about food, and an intense way of trying to stay away from calories ingested, trying not to have it take a toll on you, or an intense, compulsive way of expending calories which are believed to have been ingested. So if a person thinks that they drank a glass of milk and it's too many calories, they have to exercise or do some other strategy, such as avoiding any future eating, purging, which is bringing the food up and getting rid of it, or exercising, you know, compulsively, getting out there and running 26 miles because they're afraid they'd lose weight. I frequently go through the park to go home, and as I'm going through the park, there are certain people I see who are always running, always, always the same person. One person wears a ponytail, and a very, very thin person, always running. And I could tell, you know, you get a sense about people who are anorexia, who have anorexia, that they have this kind of a thinness that just doesn't look usual. You know, it doesn't look like a regular person who's thin. It looks like a sick person who's thin. You agree with that, Stephanie?
Yes, I do. I've seen it, yes.
There's something about it, something about the skin pallor. You know, one of the things they say about people who've got anorexia, or who are anorexics, and that means abnormal relationship with food and always trying to avoid food, always trying to lose weight, look in the mirror and see themselves as fat, even if they're not, because, you know, just imagine this. They have a digestion that's all screwed up because they don't eat normally. And the digestion is screwed up, so if they eat any kind of food, they get bloated. Then they look in a mirror after they eat, and they see themselves as huge because they have this bloat because they can't digest the food. And then they go on their tirade of losing weight. Anorexia, it's an incredible disease to live with. Who has it? Where does it come from? How can it be treated? That's what we're going to address today. many people who have anorexia are, well, I hope some of them are listening today. Why do they call it an eating disorder? To call anorexia an eating disorder is like calling compulsive hand washing a cleaning disorder. You know, indeed, I mean, so much energy is devoted to food, avoiding food, and dealing with its harmful effects in the body, that it's hard to realize this is not a relationship with food. It doesn't have to do with food. It's not an eating disorder. It's like the disorder is around eating and not eating. Food is just the enemy. Something happens, and we're going to talk about what happens. The roots of all anorexia seem to lie in deep anxiety. The sense that that your life is out of control. So at some point, a person looks at their life and they say they feel nervous and they feel like they're losing control. And then something happens once.
Well, what I have seen is that first they have a dieting. They go on a diet. And maybe somebody will say something to them. Oh, you look like you kind of are a little portly. And for some reason, they take that very seriously and they go on a diet. And this is the issue around the control, Armand, that once they go on a diet, they see results. They actually see the weight loss. And then somebody says, oh, you look good, you lost weight. And everything else around might be out of control in their life, whether it's the expectations from their parents, school, always being obedient. But they see that they have control over their weight. And that's the one thing that they can do. And that's what sets up the cycle.
So this is what it looks like, Stephanie, according to what you're saying, that it is a way of being in control. Got it? Of all things, anorexia is a control issue. If I were to say it was a food issue, nah, not as accurate, but it is a control issue because that's what it seems to be about. The anorexic, the person who is overly thin as a result of, you know, to the point of emaciation and maybe illness, person who can't eat or afraid of food, they have a fear of ingesting food, a fear of getting fat, it's about control. They have a compulsion to control something. And food becomes the thing that they choose to control. Now, I often find that interesting because I think food is associated with nurturance, you know? And I think that food is the kind of thing that, you know, if you have a loving mother, you don't necessarily have a food disorder or a disorder related to eating. But if you're somebody who wants to control your need for love, it sounds like anorexia is a good idea. Good idea meaning like I don't think it's a good idea ever. But it's like controlling love, and we're going to talk about that today. Armand DeMille here with you. Anorexia has been around a long time. There was one case documented in the 18th century. Then there was this issue of starving saints. You know, you used to see starving saints in medical literature, women who used religious fervor as an excuse for a refusal to nourish themselves. But we're also going to see that anorexia clearly is related to a rejection of a woman's sexuality, maturational sexuality. And we're going to see that anorexia is another way, and just as religious fervor can be, a way of rejecting yourself as a woman, you see? So let's say you're not comfortable with growing up and being a sexual woman. One of the things you could do is become a starving saint on one level, or you can become, you know, and become anorexic at the same time. And this way it looks like a food disorder, but it's really a sexual disorder, which is what we're going to also address. Now, anorexia hardly exists in third world countries, where there's barely enough food for survival. So in a third world country, you do not find people being anorexic because there, fatness is a sign of affluence and therefore it's okay. So that's very interesting. It's like there are no anorexics in starving countries. Anorexia is rare in countries which have sufficient food but who do not place a value on slimness. So I know there are certain Pacific Ocean tribes, countries, where fatness is valued. It's seen as a good thing. And thinness is considered a real disorder. Those countries don't have anorexics. Anorexia is predominantly a female condition, with only one in 50 sufferers being men. It typically begins in the adolescent girl at or just after puberty, although it can start at any age and can last for many years. But there are children as young as 8 years old who show concerns and behaviors around food and weight, which are typically anorexic. And the other day I was listening to a six-year-old child in a pizza parlor talk about how fat she was going to get. And I said, ooh, I don't want to get fat. I won't have a second piece. Not I'm not hungry. I don't want to get fat. Consciousness. But maybe from a very, very thin mother. But that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's a women's disorder, Armand? What makes it a women's disorder? Like, how do you see that happening?
You know, it just seems that puberty, well, I'm going to go back to around this issue of puberty, because most anorexia starts around puberty. And around this time, if you think about what is puberty for men and what is puberty for women, puberty for men is a good thing. They have more muscles, they get taller, they get stronger, they get deeper voices. You know, so they break out in acne for a little period of time, but they're also having sexual development, they're masturbating, they're having a good time in general. They're running around, they're hanging out with their friends, they're being allowed more things to do. Puberty for women is a betrayal. It's rough. It's rough because the woman starts putting on fat on her body, right? And she has to go through, Well, what do you think? I mean, what about the control issue for being in control of your body?
Well, I think that you have something about this puberty, that when a young girl goes into the menstruation cycle and they start to menstruate, you know, their body really becomes something almost foreign to them. They don't understand these moods that come over them. Their skin is breaking out. Before they start menstruating, right a few days before, they're bloated. They could be nauseous. They could have cramping. And that's probably something that they don't feel like they have any control over.
So it's kind of, think about it, boys, they don't have this kind of thing. They get the goodies.
Right.
Girls now have to deal with all these consequences of being out of control. Now, I will also say that if you're in a culture and a society and a family that handles it differently with sufficient love around the place all the time, acceptable for whatever you are, it's easier for you to go through this. But at some point, as a young girl, somebody took over your body. It's like you were invaded. Hormones to a young woman, I think, are like invaders. You know, now you're going to be out of your mind. You're going to get worried. You're going to get, you know, people are going to say things like, oh, you're about to get your period. And that's the reason you're crying. You're going to feel irrational. So you see this as what maturation is. And I think for women, they sometimes decide, I don't want to grow up. Does that make sense to you, Stephanie?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. It seems it's one way that they can stop the clock.
There's also a certain amount of shame associated with having your period, isn't there?
Well, I don't know what you think, but in my generation, which I'm one step ahead, so to speak, I'm from the generation of the 60s and 70s, and we did not have that experience of the shame. What was your experience as a teenager boy?
When I was a teenager, I remember all the girls were ashamed of their periods. They were ashamed of it. They hid it. Let me ask Christine in Germany, right? You're the last generation also. I mean, I'm one generation apart. I'm a generation older than you are.
Yeah.
You're practically two generations. But in Germany, what happened when you first got your period?
I was ashamed.
You were ashamed. You
but
felt
not
it also.
My surrounding wasn't ashamed. They found it the natural thing in the world. They weren't ashamed, but I was ashamed.
So I'm saying that I think there's a natural shame that comes with it. You know, a betrayal, there's the staining. It's a whole bunch of things that come with it. How old were you when you first had your period?
9 years old.
9 years. That's the reason I mentioned it. You were nine.
Yeah, I was very young.
You know, it's interesting. The average age 100 years ago, 18.
Yeah, that's unheard of now.
Yeah.
The average age, she's 17. She's about to get her period, right? Now nine? Mm-hmm. I wonder what it's saying. Is it saying that there's an emphasis to grow up, a kind of pressure to grow up sooner?
There's theories that the antibiotics in the milk and the various diets of the children now have caused them to have early onset of menstruation.
Kind of amazing. This is Armand DeMille with Stephanie Dombra and Dr. Christine Ulrich. We're talking about anorexia, and I'm learning from this every day. So boys go through a relatively good time at pubescence, and girls, they don't get a fair deal. But, you know, I mean, it lasts for a period of time. If it's handled right, everybody's fine. The other thing that they've noticed about anorexia is that usually the person who is anorexic is a good girl, a good person. They're good. They tend to obey their parents. They tend to live up to their parents' somewhat perfectionistic view of the way they should be. Now, I say somewhat. The parents could be flexible in this way. But it's the kind of family where if you got a B and you came home with grades of B, you would have a parent who would say, "Oh, why didn't you get an A?" There's kind of an expectation of you as a child that you're going to mature to become more than, you know, you're going to be the best. And in families where there is a theme of perfectionism, it is more likely that anorexia is going to appear. And so let's think about if you had a perfect mom or a perfect dad, not perfect, but they had this idea of what was right. Now, here's the problem. You see, if you look at anorexia, it is about perfectionism. The anorexic person is looking at their weight and trying to be perfect. And they feel the more thin they are, the more perfect they are. Is that right, Stephanie? Is that really the perception?
Well, I think their personality is somewhat like that in the first place, so that they might actually be more prone to experiencing this eating phenomenon, so to speak. So I think that the personality tends to need order.
After our break today, I want to hear from you people about your eating disorders, about your, especially around anorexia, actually not eating disorders, but around anorexia specifically, your experience of it or your children's experience or your friends' experience of it. We want to go a little further with it and tell you what we've learned. So we've now learned two things. Among anorexics, there tend to be families who are somewhat loving but have high expectations, even though those expectations may not be emphasized in the family. They will tend to let you know that they expect you to do the best possible. Now, here you are, and you're an adolescent. What do you do when you're an adolescent who is expected to become a high performer, right, and expected to excel at everything? What do most kids do? They rebel. Of course, they sneak out of the window at night. They, you know, they go gather up friends. They hang out with the wrong kids. They'll smoke a cigarette somewhere behind the staircase. You know, they'll do all the things. They'll grab a bottle of liquor. They rebel. Part of maturation seems to be you see the values that are being offered to you and you say to yourself, do I want to be like my parents or don't I want to be like my parents? And most kids look at their parents and say, I don't want to be like you. So they rebel in some way. Well, not the good child. The good child doesn't rebel. The good child doesn't even have a bone of rebellion. So if they don't have the rebellion bone, if they've had a rebellionectomy, if they've had somebody who is saying to them, be a good kid, you're the good kid, I like you because you're such a good child, and they can't rebel against their families telling them what they should be when they grow up. They can't say, I don't want to be that. So what do? They don't grow up. They do the other thing. Instead of rebelling against the desire or the family's wishes, they rebel against adulthood. And anorexia is a rebellion against adulthood. Let's take a look at some of the physical signs that really point us in that direction. What are some of the things that happen to people? What are some of the things that happen to people, Stephanie? Physically, that kind of point to the fact that, you know, they don't want to grow up.
Well, physically, for young children, they're still children in my eyes.
One
10,
out of
11,
50,
12.
By the way, one out of 50 are men.
Mm-hmm.
49 out of 50 are women. But there is the one case out of 50, and we've seen one recently, right? One case out of 50 where the adolescent boy says, I don't want to grow up. You know, and his way of doing it is through anorexia.
And without that fat in your body, things happen to you physiologically, physically. For the male, the reproductive organs don't even develop. They shrink, actually.
Let's talk about it for the women only,
okay,
because since it's 49 out of 50.
Right. So for the women, when you are prolonging this kind of experience, and it takes over after a while. It's not just you doing it. Your body actually goes into this cycle. So starving your body, you're starving your brain. Your brain needs food. It needs the glucose. You have to feed it. When you don't feed your brain, you cannot concentrate. Your reasoning starts.
See, you're sounding like the neurotransmitters really get hit a lot through
Absolutely.
Starvation. Is that right, Christine?
Yeah, pretty much so.
The neurotransmitters, a lot of the hormones, I guess, would be non-produced, you know?
I mean, it's an alarming situation for the body. It's like the body must think you starve it, so there's no food available. They go on a, like, slow program kind of thing.
And the serotonin is a key piece of this, because they start to lose interest in things. Depression really is always evident when you see someone who's anorexic. So the serotonin is dropped, and then the obsessing comes in clearly. And
well, the obsessing is not a physical sign. Let's talk about the physical manifestations. Bone loss.
Bone loss.
Now, this is an interesting thing, because when you're an anorexic, you lose body weight and you lose bone, and it makes you smaller. You see, now think about this. Think about the effect of, if you don't want to grow up, you could stay a child by being anorexic. You will become a smaller being. I had one friend, a woman who was anorexic. I didn't know she was anorexic, and she was tiny. She was tiny, and she kept herself tiny. And it wasn't until one day when I was sitting around her, she was a vague, you know, an associate, but one day I was sitting around her and I was watching her eat, and she ate minuscule amounts of food, and then she went to the bathroom, and I realized what it was, that she was anorexic and bulimic, and she was maintaining this. She weighed maybe 85, 90 pounds. She was very small, but also height will be affected, right? Now, of course, I guess, is it true, if you're not eating, then and something must happen between fat, body fat, and your menstrual cycle.
Either you never start menstruating because of the fact that there's not enough fat and the hormones in the pituitary gland, nothing's working properly. Or if you're older and you've already started to menstruate, you could stop your periods because mm-hmm. there's not enough fat in the body.
I don't know if you remember the gymnastic teams from the Eastern European countries. Those girls, some of them were like 16, 17, but they have had bodies of children, because I don't know if this was only by starving them or giving them something to stop their periods.
Hmm. Armand DeMille here with The Positive Mind. What a weird society we come from, huh? You know, anorexics, of course, don't really feel like there's something wrong. The key ingredient of anorexia is denial. They deny the illness to themselves. Nothing is wrong. They have to avoid treatment. So let me see. Christina, Ulrich, you also do life coaching. If somebody sends you somebody who's clearly got anorexia, can you do what you normally do, which is take people through any process of where they are to where they want to be? That's what you do normally. Do you do that with anorexia as well?
No, I wouldn't do that. I would send them to you, Armand, or to Stephanie, or to Roberto Atti to get treated, because I don't work with people that have anorexia or other situations with have deep psychological work blocks. So I would refer them, definitely.
Yeah, you're a roadmap kind of person. You want to achieve this, right? This is Dr. Ulrich. You want to get here, you go from point A to point B. Let's see what gets in your way, and let's talk about it until you get to where you want to be. Very valuable, but anorexia takes a different kind of treatment. What do you find is really important, Stephanie, in helping people with anorexia?
Well, I would always look at the whole family picture. I think it's important to deal with what's happening in the family household. And first you have to stabilize and get calories in. And that's the priority, because at that point, the higher level brain functioning has to get established.
Because the person can't think,
right?
There is no reasoning. That's the trouble with drinking also. You lose the power to reason. You lose the power to think. You can't say to somebody who's anorexic, come on, now, it doesn't make sense, because they can't make sense, which is, I guess, why Christine can't work with them, because it's like it's not going to be logical at all. They have strong emotional outbursts, too, because they're out of control of their emotions. So that kind of terrorizes people as well, and people stay away.
So you have to have almost like a full treatment program, so to speak.
Well, you know, I wonder if one of the things that people don't get from someone like you is being cared for. You know, there's got to be a nature of love that's different than the nature of love that you've had as a child. If the nature of love is perfectionism, somewhere, if you get a sense that there's somebody who hears you, understands you, and cares about you, you begin to relent. I think that's the real value of individual therapy. You know, maybe even group therapy, too, that the anorexia has to relent. It's like alcoholism has to relent. It has to give up. It has to be willing to make room for a new way of being. And a child who is anorexic, which is an adult who's anorexic, who comes to treatment has to see somebody who is going to say, in effect, it's okay to grow up. It's not going to cost you. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. My associates in the office today helping me out, Stephanie Dombra, Dr. Christine Ulrich. We're doing this work on anorexia because anorexia is such an important thing. It's this vicious cycle, irrational thinking to lose weight and then starves the brain and produces more irrational thinking and compulsions, and then that's how you spend all your time. You regress to a child, you become really little, and you get in danger of losing your life. And there have been deaths associated with anorexia. So we're going to take your calls after we come back from our break. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music, and then we'll be taking your calls at 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Steve Earle, and you're listening to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Get ready.
And support WBAI.
Stand by.
Peace and Justice Radio.
Let's go.
In New York.
Thank you.
The Art of Noise. The Art of Noise is a group from about 10 years ago. Did music. That one was from Below the Waist. W-A-S-T-E, Below the Waist, really. Art of Noise. When I heard Catwalk for the first time, which is what you were listening to, I thought of, I thought very clearly of what it must be like to be an anorexic and to live in some kind of a prison. Now, we're talking about anorexia nervosa, if you just tuned in. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We bring you ideas, concepts, guests, help you lead a more positively minded life. We team up with Majid Ali at times. Did you ever hear the show before mine on Mondays and Tuesdays? Well, my show's not on Mondays, but Majid Ali, hell of a bit of work he does there. And he's got such respect for the work he does. So he works with this a lot, too. He runs into a lot of cases of anorexia because there seems to be, in addition, as you were saying, Stephanie, there seems to be a chemical basis that gets triggered or goes along with this. Anorexia, you know, anorexia are those very, very thin people. In case you don't know the word, anorexia nervosa is an eating kind of disorder of people who are always worried about being fat, looking in a mirror. They spend their time working out, doing exercise, staying thin and thinner and thinner and thinner. They don't see it because at some point chemistry takes over and they're out of their minds. When I say out of their minds, that means they don't have reason any longer. And the person who is anorexic is a person whose mind is run by a dysfunctional neurological system that doesn't allow it to have the reason that says, look, you're dying. So that happens. The brain starts turning to mush because it's not getting the nutrients that it needs. What we have to do is try to capture that person, hopefully. Some people have anorexia nervosa for 2-3 years, and then something happens, and they allow themselves to grow up. They allow themselves to change. There's sometimes it's just a short-term thing. Have you seen signs, Stephanie, of when anorexia starts in adult life after pubescence, or is it usually around pubescence?
It seems to be predominantly in the teen years, and obviously, I think once it gets started, you're probably always susceptible to reverting back to that when you feel like you're out of control in your life.
Huh.
Yeah. So the personality seems to be set very early in life.
And it's a lot like an addiction. You know, in many ways, it's like an addiction.
Well, obviously, when you're starving, those opiate-like substances in the brain get released. And then those people that are, you know, anorexic are now getting addicted to that opiate state, like the endorphins when they're running. So that's part of the cycle as well.
So part of starvation is bliss. And you know there is a bliss that comes with starvation. Yeah, have any of you ever fast for a long period of time? You ever done a long fast?
A week. I did a week and I was
fasting, remember?
Yeah, really fasting and I was feeling great.
You remember how stoned you got? Fourth day, it's like, woo, mm-hmm. This is wonderful. So this is the brain dying, right? And endorphins being flooded. And it feels just terrific because now you can ride this kind of wave of being away from it all and being above it all. 212-209-2900 is our number here. We'll take a minute and we're going to take your calls. 212-209-2900. Let's review just one thing. Obedience, right? A sense of obedience is a sense of the adolescent who is most prone to anorexia, discipline, which is what they grow up with, most prone, and a perfectionism, most prone. Now, you put those all together, and the very active of anorexia is obedience, discipline, perfectionism, obsessive-compulsive. You know, it's all that stuff, the same stuff that was the structure of the personality. I hope you understand this. It's a very complex thing. We bring you these things, and we hope We'll take the volumes of information, the psychiatric information that's available on any one subject, and lay it at your feet and hope you could grab it, my friends, because that's what we do. We're translators. That's right. The psychodetective and the translators of the complex, the stuff that they like you to believe you can never understand, my friends, you do understand. And that's the gift of WBAI as well, bringing you programs that will take it out of the mysterious into the real. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of our calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hi there.
Good afternoon, Armand.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good.
I
can you turn down your radio the whole way?
It's off.
No, all the way. I still hear it on.
Oh, it's off.
It's off?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay.
The radio is always there. Echo on your end?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe it's because...
It might be. It might be our problem.
Okay. I have no first-hand experience with anorexia, but I just wanted to add something to your perspective that you've been giving out so far in the program. My name is Muhammad, and I spoke to you last year about, I mentioned the book Beauty Myth.
Yes, I remember.
Well, first of all, just 2 points. I know on your last point you mentioned that that people become addicted in the case of anorexia. And in my opinion, most addictions result from the worship of the wrong thing, in the sense of a person worshiping the physical object that they're addicted to, or in this case of anorexia, worshiping the physical body or the loss of weight or the thinness, because in this society, you know, with the commercialism and the media influence around this, some of the negative influence is the content of which lends itself to the one specific body image of a woman, which is that of the typical supermodel, of being slim, and most movie actresses have been depicted as being slim, and therefore, i.e., beautiful or quote unquote beautiful, and I think that lends itself to the motivation to most young girls and young adult women of their obsession with being thin.
Yeah, I think that's a very good beginning, Muhammad. I thank you. I thank you for that observation.
And again, I think it's a spiritual problem. I know you're approaching it from a psychological...
No, I'm aiming right where you're going.
It's a spiritual dysfunction in the sense of the person worshiping a certain type of image and trying to attain that type of image, I think, also.
I hear. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for opening our eyes to this problem. I didn't have much knowledge of it before, but I'm learning a lot today.
Good, I'm glad.
Okay. Have a good day.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Actually, good afternoon, Armand. I want to pose a question because I'm not young anymore, but I grew up in a very violent and abusive home, which not only perfection, but absolute obedience and no possibility of complaining or crying was allowed. If I cried, I got beat up harder.
Mm. Where was this? What country?
I was born in Colombia, in South America.
Yeah, I thought so. It sounded it.
So it was not only admissible, but I got told, I can kill you and nobody would care. But anyway,
right.
I was overfed by my mom because she kept telling me that was the only way that men would not bother me. So probably by the age of 16, I was 180 pounds.
Uh-huh.
You know, I still, people see my picture of the Sweet 16 and they say, my God, you were 40 or what? How old were you there over the obesity? I came to the United States and somehow I began looking at other people, seeing other things. I changed and began dieting in the extent to lose so much weight that I fainted a couple of times. I went the other way. I got married and lo and behold, I ended up with kind of a husband that diminished me and whatnot. But I'm not focusing on that. After he left, what I began doing was eating, but I had that idea, and I became aware probably about 10 years ago, that idea that I'm very skinny, and I'm not. I am not, and I am probably back at about the 180 pounds that I grew up with. But in my mind, and I don't have mirrors around my house. I noticed that, you know, one day I saw myself in by Rockefeller Center, and I saw my reflection, and I got shocked because mentally, somehow, I believed that I was very skinny. Is this part of the same thing? And I am obsessive. I am compulsive. To this day, I'm obedient. I'm very good with authorities. I do not get problems. It's like all that is part of my personality.
No, no. This is a different thing called mirror denial personality disorder. This is a... this is the one that you're talking about, which, by the way, is not the first time I've heard it. It has to do with being able to, is living a childhood program. So you're still living, or what got re-triggered in you, was the very program that you had when you were a child. Your mother telling you, you must eat more, you must eat more, you must eat more. Now, your mother had to deny. She had to keep you away from reality. She had to keep you away from anybody who would have told you it's the wrong thing to do. So she isolated you in sorts, which is what you've done by not having mirrors in your house.
Oh, God.
So what we're suggesting, or what I'm suggesting, what's your name?
Luce.
Luce, what I'm suggesting is you're probably hypnotized. Now, believe it or not, this is what parents do to children. You get hypnotized by having something said to you over and over again under duress. This is very strong with multiple personality disorder. You get told over and over again something about yourself, and you believe it. I could give you an example of it. A mother could pick up a young child, and it doesn't even have to be bad. She could say to a mother could pick up her son and walk around with her son and say, nobody will ever love you the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody will ever love you the way I do. And they keep saying it, and they're rocking the baby while they're doing this. And the child gets hypnotized to these words. And then the child, a young man, grows up, and he can't form a relationship with anybody besides his mother, and he wonders why. Well, we go in, and we examine it, sometimes through hypnosis, and we find that those words are still running in his head. Nobody will ever love you except your mother, because he was hypnotized. In order to be controlled, Luce, what your mother had to do, and I've heard this very often in Colombia specifically, there were repetitious words, repetitious beliefs, plus physical threats that kind of sent your mind into a place where it was searching for a belief. And this belief is in there, and we have to kind of get to it. Now, you can do everything you can with reality to deny it. You could buy mirrors, you could go on diets, you could do all of that, but it seems to be cropping up there, and I would suggest you get to somebody who can help you unearth it, you know, pull it up.
I would like to see if I get Joan's phone so that I can see if you guys accept the kind of insurance that I have.
I will direct you to a place that will accept the insurance, not even at my place, but I'll find you a place that can, okay? So you stay in tuned, and we'll give you the phone number later.
Okay, thank you kindly. Sure. Appreciate your help.
Sure.
Good day.
Right. Yes, and to all of you, you know, if there are financial problems that are stopping you from getting the help you need, we will act as a clearinghouse for you. And we've got a number of names and phone numbers of people who are out there who will render treatment for practically nothing, you know, for very low cost, to help people who are in need. Nowadays, the psychiatric community has kind of turned on itself, with the minimum fee being in the average clinic a $40 per session charge, which is enormous. Most people can't afford that. If you can't, there are alternatives. Of course, there is managed care, but a lot of people don't have insurance. So I know one or two therapists who have opened their doors to helping people out. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, hello.
Hello.
Hi, I have a question regarding my concerns for a relative if she has an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't know if it's necessarily considered an eating disorder, but for years she's been obsessing with her weight to the point where she's, I think, over-exercising. And she's pretty much abusing, in my opinion, laxatives.
Yes, that goes right with it.
Okay, so that does go along those lines.
Sure, the belief is that if you take the laxatives, you will lose day by day. Mm-hmm. Not only do you lose a food that you eat, but you lose water. Mm. And you see, and you drop a lot of water weight as well. So you start losing. And what happens is a very funny thing happens to the skin and bones. Mm-hmm. They almost start to detach without water. So there's, as some people grow a fuzzy kind of, what is it like? It's like dander or down. It's like a down on their skin. Mm-hmm. And you can see this light hair on their skin. That's a symptom that that's happened. So, yes, it sounds like she's got the classic signs of somebody with anorexia.
I see. I mean, right now she's in her 30s, but I've been saying this for the past, I'd say, maybe 12 years.
And how's her mind?
She's a pretty even-tempered person. I know you discussed the things about, I don't know if you mentioned specifically the word submissive, but she's a person that she's easy to get along with. But where males are concerned, the men in her life, she's that submissive type of person. She's constantly seeking attention or looking for love.
Yeah, and the seeking attention and looking for love is the original motivation for people who are anorexic, because that's part of what they believe is true, you know. They can't rebel. So I think you've identified it, and I hope you can get your friend some help. It's very hard, though, because they won't believe you.
Yeah, it is hard. And another relative, we had discussed it some time ago, and, you know, we both tried to bring up the fact that we thought the laxative issue was unhealthy. But like I said, she's the type who over-exercises. And growing up, she had actually been the one of us who was, I guess, a little more of what used to be called husky growing up. So, you know, she looked at it as losing baby fat after delivering a child, having twins, actually. But then to me and our other cousin, we looked at it as really kind of obsessive.
Sure. And so you get a sense of it. You do get a sense of it. And as I said, very difficult, because denial is a very important part of it. Maybe you could trick the person into some kind of treatment very often. And by doing that, you would say, you know, I know a health practitioner who does a special analysis of your hair or something like that, just to get them near a health practitioner. Like Majid Ali, who's on the program with us. He does internal medicine, and he does this kind of systemic stuff, and you get somebody who will not judge the person.
I see. And right now she's going to be married later on this year, so that brings upon another obsession. Another reason or purpose to be obsessed with her weight.
Yes, that's one on one hand. But, you know, on the other hand, maybe she'll accept her womanhood now that she's getting married, and it'll turn around. It's possible.
Mm-hmm. Possible. Hopefully.
Hopefully, yes. Hopefully for everybody.
Do you have, Mr. Majid, do you have his information? We're actually located. We're in New Jersey.
I don't know, but you could always call WBAI and find out from them, 212-209-2800. And they always have those answers.
Okay. Right. Thank you so much.
Sure. Armand DeMille here. Let's take one more call. This is Armand DeMille with you. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Yes.
Hi. Hi, turn your radio all the way down, please.
Yes, it's all the way down. I'm so glad to get you. You know what? My daughter's 11, and she keeps claiming that she's, you know, it's classic, everything that you describe, but she keeps telling me how I don't love her, and I'm almost indifferent to it because she's always been high maintenance, you know, and I had a baby 20 months ago, and I'm just feeling like I need to stop doing something and pay attention to make her feel loved. She's very thin naturally, but she has always talks about how fat her legs are and jiggling, and I really feel like she's a candidate because she has a lot of obsessive compulsive tendencies.
You know, and this sounds like, I'm so glad you want to pay attention to it. What's your name?
Judith.
Judith, I'm so glad you're one of those parents who see it, who don't whitewash it, because most parents do see it and they just ignore it. They say, oh, she just wants to be thin because, you know, thin is a great value. No, getting attention with this, especially just having a new baby, would be a terrific thing to do. And I think in this case, family counseling is terrific. It's like a great way to approach it. Rather than saying that she's sick, which she will deny, going into a family counseling with you and her would be one way of really approaching it.
Okay. Okay, so one way to start would be, I hear you saying that you really need some more love and care from me, and I'm willing to try and do this with you. Would be good?
I think you should take her, and I think you should say to her, you know, I'm having a hard time trying to be the mother that I am, and I'm not giving you everything you need, so I'm going to go to counseling, and I'd like you to go to counseling with me.
Okay.
I think that's the best approach.
Okay. And would somebody like Roberta be good for this type of deal?
Roberta deals a lot with emotional rather than the physical. The physical rather than the emotional. No,
okay.
I would recommend somebody like Stephanie Dombro or one of the family therapists for this particular issue. Sure.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Of course, you know, a little loving and words are really one thing, but sometimes your children manifest problems that just don't make any sense because you haven't done anything wrong. Yes, if you're in Colombia and you're beating your child and saying, you know, I could kill you and nobody would know the difference, that's one kind of stress. But you see, the difference with that is that you get a chance to rebel. You know at some point that they're wrong and you fight back against your parents. If you have rebellion, you get saved from a lot of things. Because sometimes children understand that something's wrong and they fight against it. But if, on the other hand, you don't have that and you're somebody who just gives in a great deal, it becomes very difficult. So anorexia is one of those problems to understand, and we hope we've brought you some understanding about it today. If you want a copy of today's program, you can try to get it through the website, WBAI.org. They've had some trouble downloading their programs recently. If it's essential for you, you could call my office and we'll get you a copy of it, 212-757-4488. If not, try the website, thepositivemind.com. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Thank you.